City Council will come to order. Please call the roll. So.
Adams, Leonard,
here.
Saltzman,
here.
Sten,
here.
Potter.
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity they are authorized to represent. Well, today we're having, we're beginning the work of turning our visioning process and also looking at some of our previous plans and consolidating them into a single Portland plan. We heard from unprecedented numbers of Portland voters, Portlanders about their dreams for the future, as well as the value that those dreams rest on. We've heard from Portlanders whose dreams have never been heard before. Now, if the Portland plan will begin turning these dreams into a tangible roadmap that will guide as Portland grows in the coming decades. The conversation we're beginning today is about how the Portland plan will take those values and turn them into the Portland of the future. And so, starting off, we'll ask Gil Kelly to start the conversation.
Thank you, Mayor, and good afternoon, City Council. Gil Kelly, Director of Planning. And with me today are members of the Planning Bureau staff. To my right, Joe Zender, and to my left, Steve Dotter and Celia Heron, who are going to make different pieces of the short presentation we have for you today. We're here to give you a progress report. We said when we were last in front of you in November that we'd be back every few months to just let you know what's going on with this very large and important effort for the city. And so we're following through on that today. We're going to be talking to you about some of the internal tasks, research, and so forth that's been going on, our engagement process that has been occurring over the last several months with the community, and with the upcoming milestones for the project, so that you're brought up today. We are requesting no action today. It's simply an update, although I do want to take a moment to thank the Leonard Saltzman budget team for endorsing our request for next year. I hear we're getting Water Bureau funding for the project, Randy. Thank you very much.
I'm not sure what we lost in that one.
Celia did a great job.
That's right.
Very good. Very competent.
But we do have a short PowerPoint that we're going to be showing you today, and it will be up on the screen for the audience here and televised so they can follow along. We're going to begin that. I'm going to remind you of sort of what the effort is and why we're doing it very quickly. Steve is going to talk about a couple of the research tasks to sort of illustrate by example a couple of the things that we've been doing and how they will benefit the project as it moves forward. Celia is going to talk a little bit about the outreach that we've done to date. She's heading up that team. And Joe Zender will then finish off talking about the project milestones in the context of the project phases. We then have invited a couple of people on the community engagement team that's been working with us to present. Linda Robinson and Lisa Reed Guaro are here to talk to you about their perspective on the outreach portion of the effort. We had also invited Marion Haynes from the Portland Business Alliance, who intended to be here today, but was called away to another meeting just before this one, so will not be, but wishes to convey the PBA's support for the effort. So let's move into the first image here. The Portland plan will update the city's 1980 comprehensive plan and its 1972 downtown and 1988 central city plans. These are plans that laid the foundation for much of what we honor and cherish about Portland today. And it's time once again to take stock of our future as we did then, and be very thoughtful and bold, as we were then, about how we want to shape our future for the next 30 to 40 years. One only has to look back and remember that before this generation of plans I just mentioned, there was no light rail system, there was no Pioneer Square, there was a flagging retail core that was oozing its energy out to the suburbs, and doors were closing downtown. There were deteriorating inner neighborhoods in Portland that are now flourishing. There was no neighborhood stability nor no affordable housing strategy to speak of. There was no waterfront park, and we had a very dirty river. So I think you only have to go back and think about those things to understand the value of taking this once every 30 year or so major effort to conceptualize and thoughtfully plan our future. Of course, there are also things that we did not have then that we have now. One is that we had not annexed East Portland, and you can see from this map here, all of the white area is annexed since the last time we did these plans. So we certainly have a new component of Portland to plan for. We now have a population of nearly 600,000 as opposed to the 350,000 we had during the time, which begs the question, will we double our population once again in the city in the horizon year of the planning effort we're talking about? And we have a host of other issues that are current and for which our plans really have no direction to give us. And those are reflected on this this next slide. These are reflective of what were then five areas that we came to talk to you about in November, five issue areas. We've expanded them, teased them apart slightly, and Celia will describe in a few minutes. These are the issues that tend to resonate in our discussions with the community so far. And you can see that these are not only the embodiment of sort of large social and environmental drivers in Oregon and the rest of the country now, but they also cut across the typical planning categories of transportation, land use, housing, economic development, and so forth. So these are relevant to the making of the new plan. And the last slide I want to show you is just what we what we've resolved, at least for now, to be the five key products that will be the outcome of this effort. So when we're all done, these five groupings, the physical plan of development, which will include not just land use and zoning, but will include the transportation systems and our watershed thinking, an economic development strategy, both short and long term, being co-led by planning and PDC with the cooperation of OSD, an infrastructure plan that will guide the investments the city makes in its infrastructure in five-year increments over the horizon of the plan, and strategies, updating our strategies around equity and inclusion. So, for example, our housing affordable housing policies and many others that get at the social fabric of our city and the basic equity all of our citizens expect. So those are the areas where we'll be producing new guidance, much in the way that we did when we did this back in the 70s and early 80s, in light of today's challenges and those that we see coming forward. So I'm going to turn it over to Steve Dotter, who's going to give you a couple of examples of some of the thinking that we've been doing about how we might use research going forward into the community discussions.
That's a good question.
To help do that. Yep.
It's a framing question.
Yep.
So educational institutions, mm-hmm. K-12 and higher education, and the role of the county as part of this process.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the frame,
mm-hmm.
how are those pieces of what in reality are part of the community's frame included or not in this effort?
They will be included. Topically, they will be talked about. A portion of what you talked about will be described in the economic development strategy, the role of higher education in particular. In community life, when we talk both in Central Portland and in the inclusion strategies, those will come into play topically. When you go back to the framing issues slide, you'll also see that we have a category called ways and means, where we really want to get at who is doing what, who has responsibility for what, and with what money and what sources of funds. So I think we'll get at some of the questions that may be embodied in what you're saying there as well.
So the whole issue, just if I could drill just a few seconds
sure.
more down further. So the whole issue of facilities, educational facilities, we dealt with it this morning vis-a-vis David Douglas mm-hmm. School, Portland Public Schools, struggling to try to figure out how to both provide, you know, neighborhood schools, but also citywide access to various programs. It's they're going through a planning process around facilities mm-hmm. integrated with curriculum mm-hmm. and access to curriculum. How are you going to integrate them, A, and then B, how do we do it in a way that they actually feel some buy-in?
We haven't yet. We've had some preliminary discussions with the school districts, not just PPS, but the others, and certainly with the higher education entities. Getting this on their screen, we haven't yet figured out with them exactly how those issues get represented, and moreover, how the policies are worded in such a way that they're useful for them. So that's some of the work that we intend to do going forward. I can only say at this point that I think the scoping of the issues that have done includes the issues that you've raised, and so we'll have to be vigilant about making sure that there's policy follow-through, but that's certainly our intent, is to get at those very issues you mentioned.
So joint planning with the school district
is, yep,
not, is part of our the scope of our ambition for this?
To a certain degree. I'm not exactly sure what is in your mind precisely about that, but I'd certainly like to talk further with you about it, because we want to make this plan relevant for not just the city, but for the other entities there.
And I'm asking these questions without having clear answers necessarily,
yeah,
myself yet, but it seems to me that the county and the school districts are at least two of the major partners in
absolutely
the making and remaking of Portland, that we've got to sort of figure that out. And
absolutely.
So that at the end of this, they actually want to fulfill our plan as well.
I think the surrogate for what we're calling ways and means that we have right now is Resolution A and the city's capital budget. And those both need to be looked at from a step back and saying, is this the way we want to continue to do business?
Right. And I think that actually that going to Resolution A prematurely, although that you're appropriate to flag it as an obstacle because it might or might not be as relevant a guidance,
right,
as it used to be, but at least figuring out together with the school district and the county of what together we're going to do,
yes,
with citizens and everyone else to in Portland in the next 25 years is absolutely key.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you do that exactly in terms of process, but mm-hmm, I'd be interested as you move forward.
Okay.
Okay. As Gil said, I'm going to speak to some of the technical work that's been done to date and how it might impact the products of the plan. And I'm going to talk specifically about the economic development work. There are seven work groups of city staff, and in some cases staff from other agencies, that have been preparing kind of background papers that identify the current conditions and to what degree we're in compliance with state and regional requirements. And those documents will be available in early April. So this is a bit of a preview of that material. The Economic Development Group, which consists of PDC and the Planning Bureau and the Office of Sustainable Development and the Bureau of Housing and Community Development, are looking both at short-term strategy issues so that PDC can update their current economic development strategy, and then the longer-term 20-year strategy that will be part of the Portland plan. In doing that work, they first started looking at the work that they traditionally look at, which is the kind of competitiveness issues, the traded sector, global competitiveness issues, and looked at the conclusions from Vision PDX, which identified sustainability, both sustainability from a business practices perspective and sustainability from the perspective of businesses that Portland could be in, the Portland region could be in, as an issue we should focus on, and also the issue of equity, that is how income is distributed and how jobs are distributed across the region and within the city, and is it open to all groups. So their research work covered all of those areas, and I want to speak briefly about one of those areas, that is the role of manufacturing. And one of the things they've identified is, looking at the chart, in 1977, manufacturing in this area was approximately 25% of the gross domestic product from the area, that is the income generated here, the sales in this area, and it was almost the same percentage of jobs. Since then, what's happened over time is we all know that it's decreased in terms of the percentage of jobs in the region, but it's maintained its role in terms of the money it brings into the region to support the region. So as we look at what we need to do as a jurisdiction or as governments, traditionally we support business development by providing land, by providing the necessary infrastructure, and by providing labor training. Clearly, we need to continue to provide support in all three of those areas, as we have in the past, but our expectations about job production as a result of industrial activities will need to be different in the future. And they're beginning to look at what that means in terms of the job training programs, both in the short and the long term. The other area I want to mention briefly has to do with neighborhood character. And as you can see from the drawings, the sketches, this deals with the kind of development pattern in the city. And our developments generally, our regulation around development was built around this kind of center image, Southeast Portland, built in the... Sam, did you have a question?
I did when you're done with your slide.
Oh, okay.
This is a very exciting topic for me.
I know. it's the area that was developed primarily in the streetcar era. They're relatively small blocks, a certain lot pattern. Our zoning code and our other regulations were primarily written around this area of the city. Since that time, we have annexed the area east of I-205, which has the same kind of grid, but it's a much larger scale grid. The lots are different. And we've also had more development in Southwest, where it's quite hilly. The topography changes things. And also the stormwater, because we have more natural streams there, that those characteristics are different. And the next image, you can see one of the things we're looking at is whether those three areas of the city, shown in the green, the yellow, and the tan, whether the single set of regulations shouldn't be adjusted in some way to reflect those basic differences in the landscape. And by that, when I say set of regulations, we're thinking of not only the zoning requirements, but also the street design standards, perhaps the stormwater management approaches. And so one of the conversations we want to have with the community, we've begun with the community, is, are these three areas logical groupings? How would they work out? How would our regulatory approach change so that we ended up with a landscape that met what the goals call for? That currently it says that almost every neighborhood plan in the city says that we should reflect the existing character of the area. In many ways, our regulatory approach makes that very difficult to have happen.
Could I ask you additional question on the slide 7? It says that we've kept up on GDP or maintained GDP, which is pretty remarkable given the percentage of jobs.
Uh-huh.
How have we done that?
Well, we think it is because the firms have become more efficient and therefore globally competitive, so they continue to sell elsewhere in the country. Now, part of that means is they're more labor efficient. Mm-hmm. So their role in producing income to the region is the same as it was in 1977. Their role in producing jobs for Portlanders will be different in the future, and we have to figure out how our program should respond to that.
And GDP, remember, in the GDP calculations, they bank profits from overseas. So the GDP can be very misleading.
Yeah, and we need to be careful
it's a global economy reality.
Yes.
So I'm glad you compared jobs to GDP. So there is efficiency in labor, and a lot of that labor has gone overseas.
Yes.
They still get to bank their profits in Portland.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But they don't have the jobs here.
Right.
Okay.
But then some of that income is used to support other activities in the region, and
absolutely.
Need to deal with that. We also need to deal with the fact, as you've seen in the headlines, there's a fair number of retirees in the sort of high-skill manufacturing area. And in order to keep those manufacturing businesses here, we have to have the labor to do the replacement as we go forward. So I think both in the short and the long term, this is an important thing for us to look at.
Because if you look at median family income for Portland versus the region, it's flat at best.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, and our job growth is not as good as this either. But yeah.
All right, I want to speak briefly. Basically, back in November, you gave us two charges when we came to you to talk about the Portland plan. And one was to go out to the community and say, these critical issues that you've framed, these questions, are they really going to be an effective way to talk to Portlanders about what the scope and the issues of the Portland plan will be? Will this be a good way to have that conversation? And the second piece was, frankly, what does the community think good public engagement on something as big as the Portland plan looks like? What does success look like? So we've gone back out in the field since January. We've been talking, starting with the neighborhood network, neighborhood associations, business associations, the coalitions, and beyond, to ask those two questions. We've been trying to learn, take the lessons we've learned from Vision PDX and Community Connect. There's also the youth planning program, so we're really trying to engage the conversation around youth, because arguably who more than the youth are going to really care what happens in the next 30 years, because they're going to be there seeing what we've done and what they've helped make happen. So we've gone out to the community. We'll be continuing to going out to the community and asking these questions. On the content area, on the planning, what they're saying about the critical issues, first, I'm here to tell you something you already know. The people in Portland get that the Portland plan, livability, and land use is a big deal, and they want to be involved, and they want to know that their input matters. So when we said, what about these critical issues, some of them, especially in the neighborhood network, folks who've been spending a lot of their time, volunteer hours, evenings, et cetera, taking care of issues like livability and land use, they say, let's get to those issues. We know those are going to be difficult trade-offs, and let's talk about it. I'll just frame the conversation. Is this still on? Okay. Frame the conversation and start talking about possible solutions. At the same time, we've also heard that some folks say, wait, don't close off the options yet. Don't tell me all the topics. I need to make sure that my issues are heard and that they're reflected in what you guys are going to study together for the Portland plan. So we're hearing it both ways, and that's going to mean the public engagement, the information, the input, involvement is going to need to address both of those audiences and meet them where their interests are relevant. But those are what we're hearing. So we're going to have a complicated but fully robust dialogue in that regard. Other things that we're hearing loud and clear is that there's a lot of good research out there, whether it's technical analysis, like Steve's talking about starting out with the technical working groups. But as we go along, there's going to be a need for good information, technical analysis, whether it's carbon footprint or traffic studies. As we go along, in order to make good, informed decisions, we need solid information. And they're saying the citizens want to be part of that. They want that information so they can help make that dialogue happen. Now, what they're saying about public engagement, again, is people do want to be involved. And loud and clear, they want to know that their input has been heard. They understand not everything they say is going to get incorporated into a policy or plan, but they want to know their time and their thoughts and their input has been considered, and they want to know what happened to that input. The other thing that we got a little bit of pushback on fairly was that the time frame for the first phase of the project, the project scoping in terms of what are we going to study in the Portland plan and how we're going to do it in terms of public engagement, they said, we want more time. You need to give us more time to consider the issues, debate the issues, and talk about public engagement. So one of the things what we're requesting is to extend by 90 days, this first phase of project design. Still, the three-year Portland plan timeframe doesn't change, but we want to allow more time for this portion so the public has due time to consider the work plan issues that are in front of them and the public engagement that's so critical to making this a success. Other things we've heard, again, loud and clear from the people we've been talking to, they want that the input reflects the diversity of interest in the communities that are out there in Portland. And it's not just the usual suspects, but beyond. They say take the lessons from Community Connect and go out to where the community leaders are. Don't reinvent the wheel. Go to their meetings. Talk to them. Have them help us speak with their communities so that whatever resonates with them gets reflected back to us. They tell us to be creative. It's not all about nighttime meetings. Sometimes it's hands-on. Sometimes it's online tools. Sometimes it's focus groups, opinion studies, et cetera. And so we're developing a full range of approaches and information, involvement, et cetera, to respond to these objectives in terms of what makes good public engagement. And finally, at the end of the day, when we said when we're done, what's the best sign of success for public engagement? And that is when the Portland plan is all finished, that the community capacity and the community connectedness amongst individuals and the groups is stronger than when we started. So we've enhanced and built on that community capacity and the connectedness. then, because that will be a legacy beyond that. Joe will speak in a moment on the time frame and the phases of this multi-year project. But basically, just to wrap up on the public engagement, we are shaping with a lot of public input and continuing input, an active, inclusive public engagement, building on what we've learned from the Portland Plan, Community Connect, and all the work that the neighborhood networks have done. It'll focus on information, education, involvement, and input. We're proposing that the Planning Commission be appointed as the group of community members to review the public engagement strategy, which is a component of the state requirement to do comp plan update. And really what we're starting to do is getting ready to roll up our sleeves, because as Steve alluded to, first part of April, we're going to have some key documents that people are very eager to see. One is the evaluation of the periodic review that says, yep, looks like we might need to do comp plan update. The second is a proposed work plan. What are those issues that ought to be addressed? Third is a public engagement strategy. How do we go about doing this thing called the Portland Plan for the next 2.5 years? And then the technical analyses from the technical working groups. That really kicks off as the first bookend in April through August, when we come back to council asking you to bless these documents as formal documents and forwarding to the state. This really starts the first major input of public conversation, public dialogue about what ought to be in the Portland Plan and how you guys want to go out about doing that. We're planning with the community a series of meetings, events, tabling, community fairs, culminating or wrapping around June 6th, which is what we're calling the Portland Plan Summit. We're bringing in Svend Auckland, Danish parliamentarian and environmentalist, as well as other local luminaries, as it were, and a series of community meetings to have this conversation in mass around the key issues of the work plan, what we should be focusing on for the Portland Plan, and how we go about doing that with good public engagement.
So since we're a little bit over time, let me just go quickly through the timeline and phasing. This first phase is about project design, and really its content is what Celia just told you. We're designing public engagement, the work plan, and doing background research. Those deliverables are out April 1st, and we're back to City Council August 6th for your review and approval of both of those for the evaluation and the work plan and the public engagement plan. The second phase, which actually starts in May, with public engagement, is where we're setting the goals for the plan, identifying the issues and choices. It's really sort of the broad, the fullest draft of what the plan will address, and that goes between May of this year through summer of 2009. The third phase is where we actually winnow that down through making additional choices and focusing in on a set of policies and recommended actions that will be the draft plan, and that's from summer of 2009 through winter of 2010. Fourth phase is implementation, where we're developing the specific codes, regulations, capital project lists, and other sort of implementing actions to follow through on the objectives of the plan. As we said, we're in the public engagement now to design the process. We start immediately in May with public engagement to set goals and move into the first phase. And we're going to have those public meetings citywide, but one of the centerpieces of that public engagement phase is June 6th with this summit meeting in the central city that really will set some of the bigger sort of aspirations of the plan. And with that, I'd like to invite up Linda and Lisa Regrano to add their comments.
Good afternoon, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mayor Potter and Commissioners. My name is Lisa Reed Guanero with the Public Engagement Advisory Team. As a Portland resident, I know some communities' perception of our city community outreach seems to be a superficial exercise to give the appearance of engaging the public. They feel the plans the city made were forced placements rather than what the larger community really wanted. And if they were engaged, they felt they hadn't been heard. But I'm glad to say in the past couple of years, the Vision PDX public engagement process was quite effective. The process was incredibly inclusive, far-reaching, and was quite successful in being able to engage a very diverse population. Out of this process came great documents like this one, Uniting Cultures in Portland, which is an invaluable resource. As you know, excellent and effective outreach is essential, but in order to accomplish this, there has to be adequate funding and enough time. There's a lot to be done to do this job right, including an information and education component so people can make informed decisions, translation of materials to different languages so the city can be inclusive to all the residents, a two-way dialogue with honesty and forthrightness at the front end about where the city is in the plan, and let the public know that what the city has done with their input. So even if the outcomes that they hoped for weren't implemented, at least they know they were heard. Alternative methods to disseminate information to engage different groups, for instance, online, printed, street theater, community events, to name a few. There needs to be plenty of visuals and other ways to simplify this very complex plan. This will accommodate different learning styles and language barriers. There needs to be enough time for people to consider the info and give their input with reasonable timelines. As public engagement continues throughout all the phases, the degree and kind of public engagement will change. So clarity of what kind of engagement is needed during this phase will be very important. In conclusion, we hope you will adequately fund the public engagement piece of the Portland plan, and be sure to consider enough time for this job to be done right. The city has the chance to earn the trust of the public, to know that they are honestly going to listen and that their input truly makes a difference. Once the city is able to gain the trust of the people, Portland will be an even more vibrant and energized city with participation and excitement than it's never seen before. Thank you.
My name is Linda Robinson, and I was asked to speak today in part as a resident of one of those areas that was annexed since the last comprehensive plan was done, and to reinforce the importance of the idea to back their idea of having different codes or different characteristics for different parts of the city. I can very much verify that overlaying the existing comprehensive plan onto outer East Portland has created some really strange situations. We have flag lots that were created before we were annexed that have been carved into additional flag lots. So you've got long driveways side by side. You've got lots of private streets, often private streets side by side, issues of how those will be maintained in the future, plus the waste of land of having two side by side streets with nothing between them. There are all sorts of problems that has created, and we do need to make some changes, make something that works given the way that part of town is platted. And I know there are different situations in the west side, some of those newly annexed areas with the hills and ditches and all those things that you have to take into account. So that's something that very important. In order to do that well, you really need to engage the public, engage people who live with those things that can tell you what parts of that is working, what parts of that doesn't work. So I want to reinforce that notion that you really need to allow as much time as you can in these early stages to get the public engaged. Somehow catch their attention. Let them know that this is going to impact decisions that are made about their property, adjacent properties, for the next 20 or 30 years, and somehow catch their attention and get them involved. Maybe we can just do something with duct tape to get their attention. but maintaining the character of the neighborhood, we need distinctive and well-designed places. What we're getting is not distinctive. Well, it's distinctive, but not good, and it's not well-designed. So and equity is another issue that needs to be dealt with in some of these areas. So I'm really concerned about the way the public engagement plan, that they're really engaged. It's not a one-way conversation. I reiterate Lisa's points about the two-way conversation. And there are some aspects you'll hear from other people or some of the early plans. We think that's not happening and needs to be fixed before you proceed. And others will be talking to that issue, I'm sure.
We have three speakers signed up.
Please
Paul Leisner, Mark Bartlett, and Amanda Fritz.
Gil, just to clarify, the cameras are not here for the Portland plan. They're here for the very critical issue of what comes next.
Totally disappointed.
The comprehensive duct tape plan, which seems to have more public interest at this point than the Portland plan, or I should say media interest, I'm sorry to say.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
My name is Paul Leisner, and I'm currently serving as the chair of the Southeast Uplift Board, and I participated in the three meetings of the, it's called the Public Engagement Advisory Group that Lisa and Linda are on as well. I appreciate Gil Kelly's stated commitment to follow recently developed community governance principles with the Portland Plan. I agree that a well-designed Portland Plan process could serve as a valuable model to how to involve the public in decision-making in the future. It's a great opportunity. Unfortunately, the Portland Plan process so far does not live up to the principles and values set out in Community Connect, in BIP 9, and the Public Involvement Task Force, especially in the areas of early involvement, transparency, and good process design. Early involvement, the Bureau of Planning's technical working groups, which I think the results are being developed now from those groups, began many months ago to examine the existing comprehensive plan to look for areas that need to be changed or added. In contrast, the Bureau of Planning waited to start the design of the public process until really only a few weeks ago. I know that they went out to coalitions, but the actual group that started meeting to talk about the process met first on February 19th. At that first meeting, the group was told that they would need to have at least a basic draft to go to the Planning Commission within less than 2 weeks. So I'm very happy that they've asked for an extension, and having Celia Heron brought on as part of that with her past experience with ONI has also helped that process. But the early involvement is crucial to making these things really work. Also, transparency. We've all talked a lot about transparency, but when members of the community contacted the Planning Bureau and asked for information about the technical working groups, who's on them, what's their charge, what are they doing, that information, the Planning Bureau would not share that with them, even though that is technically public record. Again, it just seemed like, why do that? It just creates suspicion. And so very recently, we've gotten some of that information, but that should have happened automatically. I think that's part of this culture issue we've talked about before. And then good process design. Good upfront process design is the most important element in any public involvement process. You spend tremendous amounts of money trying to fix them when they're bad. So let's make sure it works right from the beginning. It's a gift to the Bureau staff that don't get beat up, and it's also a gift to all of us that volunteer for these things. A well-designed process can build trust and credibility and ensure that it's likely to meet the needs of the Bureau and the community without unnecessary turmoil and controversy. The draft involvement strategy that you've got before you today is not a good process design. It's more like a list of standard sort of off-the-shelf information. We need to clarify the role of that group that's been meeting. Also, a number of the things that the Planning Bureau said that they want to do, the summit, the workshops, none of that was talked about by this group that's been meeting to look at the process. Also, the issue of using the Planning Commission as the citizens' group that's required by state law. I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think that's going to work well. And plus, I don't think the state's going to approve it. So I really urge you to take a look at that. So again, we've got a great opportunity here. And I just ask you to work together with us and the Planning Bureau to design a good process right out. And then the next few years are going to be much smoother sailing. Thank you very much.
Hi, Mark Bartlett. I would second Paul's request that we go ahead and involve the citizens more up the front. You know from my letters to you that I've been trying to get that accomplished in the last 4 months and without much success. I finally made the distribution list 2 weeks ago. As far as substituting for the Planning Commission for the public process, I second that as well. I don't think that will work. How are 9 people going to adequately represent the views and interests of a million people when they're already busy doing other projects? So I would ask that there be some sort of committee set up, a citizens advisory committee. I know it costs more money, takes more time, but with the 90-day extension, maybe we can do something with that. I would also like to see council fund this in a way that would allow more upfront engagement, because to date, it seems to be. The citizens are going to get stuck with choosing either A or B that's a recommendation already developed by council or by the Bureau, and instead of actually collaboratively engaging the citizens to create the policy issues and the work plan. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Amanda Fritz, speaking only for myself. The comprehensive plan is really, really important. It's probably secondary only to the charter in terms of setting the rules for how Portland operates. So it's really, really important that we make this update of it happen in a manner that includes every Portland citizen. I am not able to track City Council as in as much detail as I have in the past because I'm doing other things right now. But didn't you recently appoint or in concept a public involvement commission? So why would the Planning Commission be overseeing public involvement for this process? Why not involve the Public Involvement Commission and make sure that there's an independent oversight on the public involvement part, which is, I think, what you were doing when you appointed that commission? I don't believe that the Planning Commission should be the Citizen Involvement Commission Committee for the Portland plan, for the comprehensive plan, if only because it's not physically possible for those 9 volunteers to do all of the work and everything else that the Planning Commission is supposed to do. I served on the Planning Commission for 7 years, and it spent probably about 20 hours a week doing the regular work of the Planning Commission. So to ask them to do all of the citizen advisory part of this process is simply not feasible, not reasonable, and also not wise, because we need many more voices in on that committee than just the 9 folks who are on the Planning Commission. Further, the Planning Commission will be recommending a version of the comprehensive plan to you as a regulatory advisory body. So it doesn't seem reasonable that they would also be the committee that would be proposing the whatever goes to the Planning Commission at the same time. So I really urge you to ask the Planning Bureau to rethink that section of the plan. And then thirdly, the opening summit is on a Friday from 8 till 6. So what that says to me is that the people who are welcome to that summit are those who are affluent enough to take a day off work, folks who have a business connection with or an interest in the outcome of the plan, and agency staff. It tells me that students in high school, still in session on June 5th, and working people, and parents who have small children who don't have other daycare options, aren't welcome at that summit. So what does that say to Portland citizens when we're inviting them to an 8 to 6 summit on a Friday at the very beginning of this planning process? What does it say as far as you are welcome in this process? Your opinion is important. It doesn't say to me that doesn't set the stage to me for the kind of process that we want, and I urge you to rethink those 3 things, the Public Involvement Commission, the Planning Commission being the Citizens Advisory Committee, and the kickoff date of a Friday. Thank you.
Thanks, folks.
That's all.
Hey, Gil.
Again, we're not asking for decision or direction from you all today. The issues that were raised by the speakers just now are part of we're just beginning that process that will come back to you with decisions along those lines in August, save the last point on the summit. I would only say with regard to the summit that it is an all-day event, but is not the only or necessarily the most important of those initial engagement pieces. There will be many summits we're having, mostly on weekends around the city and neighborhoods, so that there'll be multiple opportunities. No decisions get made at that meeting, and in fact, the presentations that day will be recorded and will be made available in video format to anyone who wasn't able to attain the summit presentations.
Do you have child care provided?
At the summit? I believe that's what we're attempting to do, yeah.
I do think it's pretty persuasive, though, to hold it on a day that is not a weekday.
Yeah, I think there are just constraints about the venue and speakers and so forth, but we will augment that day with several others around town.
I'd like you to move the date, but can I ask a
not
couple
sure
other
we
questions?
I just wanted to point out the following day is Grand Floral Parade.
The following day is Grand Floral Parade.
We're in a busy season.
All right. I think you could
you
find
need
a better
to get out really to get your space reserved.
Quick,
get your chair.
Turn on those cameras.
Get your chair and sit in your chair all night for the parade the next
week. We've heard the convention center will not allow duct tape to reserve
duct
spots.
Tape
no,
comments
it's okay to
coming.
Get in your
we'll
chair
you
and sit
later.
All night.
You're going to have hours to talk about duct tape. A couple of reactions. One, it sounds like you're still struggling with, is this a plan for Portland or is this a plan for the city of Portland government? And I think that if it's for Portland, then, you know, I think we need to have equal partners or pretty equal partners with the county and the school district and other agencies that are really have huge responsibilities for the people within Portland. So I think it's a difficult issue. It's a difficult request to figure out how to fulfill, but I'd like you to sort of struggle with that. The other thing is, and I think the comments about public input and public participation, you know, you should go back and
work on those.
Yeah. Work on those, but what I didn't see here enough of, and that is, you know, what's the diagnostic that we're going to be collectively working from? How, you know, you almost have to make some initial assumptions that then get tested and changed through the rest of the process, or what are the elements of a great Portland city of Portland? And how are we doing in terms of geography and neighborhood and area and socioeconomic groups, all the different slices and dices? But as you know, and I just want to make sure it's part of the public record, our public involvement has to be two-way. We've absolutely got to collect some empirical data and share that with our neighbors and get them then to react to and give us their wish list and everything else, because there's been amazing change all over city. And people's old thinking of what kind of neighborhood they live in might or might not be valid. So those are some initial thoughts. I think you're
very good thought.
I think you're off on a very useful track.
Thank you.
So what about the suggestion of the Public Involvement Commission being the main body rather than a 9-person planning commission that's already got a lot of work?
Yeah. Well, I guess rather than answer that today, that's one of the suggestions, one of the questions we'll be looking at and coming back to you with. I just want to say that whichever way we go, we're really looking at a model that is not creating one more commission either here or there as the be-all, end-all for public participation. We found out through Vision PDX there are better ways of doing things. We want to go to people where they are in all kinds of different methods, all kinds of ways, and not resolve, make a repository of one particular set of meetings or a body and spend another year and a half trying to figure out what the perfect membership of that body is. We'd rather just go to everybody where they are, be very nimble, be very accountable, report back in all kinds of formats. That being said, the Planning Commission, which you've endorsed early on, probably needs the benefit of some other voices and some other thinking in our engagement planning. And so I think we want to have the kinds of conversations that were alluded here to see what's the best way to get the advice. It may not be to impanel another commission, but it may be to get the advice of the commission that was mentioned and also some of the others here and expand our and amplify on the work we've been done with our public engagement team, which has only met two or three times. We're just starting the effort up. So,
Gil, what do you say about the issue of the Planning Commission already being very busy and that this is just going to be one more thing? How will they accommodate this additional task? It's an important
thing. They are busy. Since the days that Commissioner Fritz served on, they're not as oriented toward the code right now, so they've done some clearing. They do have some big projects. They have some couple of big transportation projects they're looking at. But we're really paying a lot of attention to their schedule right now to leave ample time for the Portland plan. I think the role that was talked about here was not whether they should be the policy advisory body, but whether they should be the citizen engagement kind of oversight body. And that's a separate question that I think we'll wrestle with. But I think they came most, and you know that there are many new members on that commission. It's a full commission now. They came on board very enthusiastic about having this central role in the Portland plan. They know it's a lot of work. They've got extra meetings scheduled. And in polling, they've also been willing to go out in addition to community-based meetings. So there's the face of the Planning Commission is represented out in the community meetings. So,
I'd like to have you meet with ONI to find out where the Public Involvement Oversight Committee is in terms of its development as well as...
I'm happy to do that. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. This is a presentation. There's no council action required. Thank you, folks. Please read the 230 time, sir.
Item 342, prohibit marking public property or right-of-way using paint, tape, or other methods or objects to reserve viewing space for a parade event.
I'm going to ask Commissioner Leonard.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Jeff Curtis from the Road Festival Association come on up. And Amanda Fritz, if you could. Amanda? Can you come on? So we have Sarah. Is my microphone? Is it working?
Just turned it off.
Did you turn off my mic?
We turned it off.
Did you?
We all got switches over here now.
Nice.
We got
thank you.
Switches.
Can you hear me? This amendment, Sarah, is a technical amendment?
Yes, it's correct? Just a minor amendment to correct that the right part of the code is cited at the end of Section C.
Okay, we'll need to adopt that at some point. I'm welcoming members of the group that met over the past three or four months to discuss the issue of reserving spaces at the Rose Festival Parade that took a variety of forms. Duct tape gets joked about a lot, but less funny is the instances of which there are a number where a number of businesses and groups were spray painting on the sidewalk and the street with permanent spray paint, reserved areas with their names on it that exist to this day. And less funny also is the, as I learned in the last few months, the increasing defensiveness within which people were defending their spaces and the increasing offensiveness of which others found that to be as they would arrive early in the morning to go to the parade. And I think all of us agreed that this was a good time to rethink whether or not we should allow the continuing practice of reserving spaces. And I think we all concluded after discussing it quite a bit that we should not allow that practice to go on and thus the ordinance in front of you. Interestingly, the group also decided that really if the idea is to make the Rose Festival Parade a pleasurable experience, then we shouldn't stop with just debating or discussing. Just reserving spots, but also issues relating to restrooms. One of the major complaints we heard in this process
get some duct tape on that.
Wow. There you go.
Let's try. Is that working now? Still very low? I think it's fine.
Well, so much for the opening statement.
Very distracting. Very distracting. What the issues that related to convenience and why we ended up calling this proposal in general parade access proposal was to make it a more pleasurable experience all around by including restrooms. So if you'll recall, Council, in the fall bump, you approved $50,000 that is to pay for restrooms that will go up and down the parade route and for some specific bleachers reserved for the elderly and the handicapped. And we'll also have a designated area to be determined by the Rose Festival Parade and others for families with small children to be able to have activities and face painting and those kinds of things before the parade, because a lot of parents with small children let us know that it's, you know, it's just very difficult to be at the parade and have your kids stay calm and patient. My goodness. And this is the largest singular news event of the whole year. It's just distressing that it's turning out like this. So anyway, that's a long way of saying of introducing these three folks, who I'd like to take a moment and have them give their perspectives, and also thank you for working on this. Jeff, why don't we start with you?
Sure. Commissioner Leonard, Council, as Executive Director of the Rose Festival, we're responsible for producing the largest single-day event in the Northwest, one of the top parades in the country, and we have a great deal of respect for the city, our city leaders, as well as certainly for our parade goers, some 400,000 people strong. And so when this came to be an issue last June, I came in front of you and said, you know, it was a timing issue about when's the right way to introduce something like this. And I'm pleased that we're here today in March, because it's really about communicating to the public what's the rules that you put forth. That's something we've always done with the City of Portland. We work with you as a partner. We have the independent responsibility of producing this great parade, but really we work as a partner with the city, and we follow your lead. In the case of these discussions, it was really brought out and really clear to me in the task force setting that it's not really about duct tape itself. It's about having a parade that's accessible to as many people as possible. And I truly, and our organization really believes that we have a great parade, and having an all-accessible parade is certainly in the best interests of the Rose Festival and the parade. So under those premise, along with amenities and a commitment to the city that they'd make a commitment to make the parade an even better experience, not solely relying on the Rose Festival itself, but commitment of resources to do that, makes this a proposal that makes sense, and we certainly endorse the recommendation in front of you. We really want to communicate with you as a city of Portland. That's our major point of emphasis, is communication with our citizens about what's proper and what's appropriate, that they can't mark their space days ahead of time. But at the same time, it's very important that we respect the tradition of people coming down the night before, bringing that family down, and really making it an experience. It is an incredible atmosphere to walk around on Friday night and see what's happening in the streets of our city.
Are you going to talk about yours and my...
Absolutely. I invited Commissioner Leonard to come down with me on Friday night so he can personally see this, and he's taken me up on that, because it is an amazing experience to see. It doesn't happen any time of the year, and that's something that is tradition, and that should be preserved. That's what makes part of what Portland is. And the people, the ability to come down and have an event as part of an event. But what this does, it allows more people to come down on parade day, the morning, and have accessible rights to the parade and have a great time and have the amenities that are necessary. That's where we come from, a perspective of accessibility. It's all about accessibility. It's not about whether it's right or wrong to put tape. It's about having a fair parade route for all of us. And thus, under those premises, we supported this ordinance.
Maybe we'll have Amanda go next, and then, Sarah, you can finish up.
I'm Amanda Fritt. That one's not working now either. Amanda Fritz, and I was delighted when Commissioner Leonard asked me to serve on this committee back in the summer last year. As you know, I'm a registered nurse, and I work in inpatient psychiatry with people who are literally at life and death and struggling with homelessness and drug addiction and things like that. And so, and then having done other things within the city, which in land use and parks, and as you know, are very contentious, I thought, well, duct tape sounds like something that would be fun. And indeed, it was an excellent committee with a number of business folks and leaders in the community, and I really appreciated serving on that committee. What I found, though, was it's really not about duct tape. It's about Portland and who we are as Portlanders and the things that we care about. And I think it's indicative of that, that Commissioner Leonard and all of you have had so many emails and involvement on this seemingly little issue, because it's about fairness, and it's about community, and it's about who we are and what we think, how we think our government should operate in, to keep us safe, to keep things equitable, and to provide access for children and elderly.